If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Trauma is not what happens to you, but what happens inside of you as a result of what happens to you. My name is Andrea, and this is Adult Child. Welcome back to Adult Child, where we take a deep dive into the impact of growing up in a dysfunctional family. Ahoy, my dear shit shows. For any new listeners, my name is Andrea. I am a total and complete shit show. I am the captain of this hot mess of a ship. And if you are wondering what the hell is an adult child and how the hell do I know if I am one, I urge you to immediately Google the ACA laundry list and prepare to shit your pants, okay? Because I find it hard to believe that you stumbled upon this podcast by mistake. Chances are like 99.99% chance that you're an adult child. But guess what? This is a podcast where we talk about what the hell to do about it, and consider yourself lucky because there are so many damn people who spend their entire lives not realizing that the recurring issues that they're encountering, whether that's at work, romance, parenting, whatever, is actually a result of their unresolved childhood shit. Yes, we curse here. You've been warned. I'm an acquired taste. You've been warned. Welcome aboard. Buckle up. We get weird here sometimes. So today we are revisiting a fan favorite episode with trauma specialist Janine Rashidi. She's also the author of the book Abundance Beyond Trauma. Highly, highly recommend. She has one of the most powerful stories that I've shared on this podcast. A wild story, yet it is still so deeply relatable. And this episode has something for everyone, okay? We aim to please around here. We are talking horrendous childhoods. We're talking toxic relationships. How unresolved trauma shows up in the body, in physical pain and illnesses. We are talking about the challenges of parenting while simultaneously trying to heal from your childhood. We're talking inner child work. We're talking somatic healing. So let's just get on with the damn show. But first, let's talk about why you, yes, you need to damn the join shit show, my online support community where I host 4 weekly Zoom support groups per week, where we have a minimum of 6 groups per week. This is a support community at your fingertips, in your back pocket, through our app, where we have a 24-hour, 7 days a week chat available to you for you to use whenever the hell you need us. If you are looking to feel seen, heard, and understood like never before, if you are looking to also have a little fun while doing this grueling healing work, a group of people that have a sense of humor, a dark sense of humor at times, let's be honest, then look no further than the shit show. This is relational trauma. We heal relational trauma through safe relationships. This is a place where you can do so, where you can heal in ways that you cannot heal in your therapist office, okay? And I'm not just saying that. So how about you? Yes, you, the person that's been wanting to join for forever. Let's do it today, okay? Let's do it. Let's kick off the second part of 2025 by damning the join. You can go to adultchildpodcast.com/shitshow or see the link in the show notes. Next, give me a little follow on the Insta, on the TikTok, at Adult Child Pod. And last but not least, whatever you do, please, give me a damn 5-star rating on Apple and Spotify. Thank you. Love you all.
All right, y'all. Well, it is my pleasure to introduce Janine Rashidi. She is the author of Abundance Beyond Trauma, and her practice is called Goodbye Tension, which we'll be getting into to all of that. But welcome.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
I'm excited to talk to you. So I've read so many damn books about trauma, and yours was like the first one in a long time that really caught my attention. And I don't know, I felt like you were bringing something new to the space. So
that's great.
Good for you.
Yeah. I actually had not read many trauma books myself, so I really didn't know how it compared. But it seems to be doing fairly well. It's reached bestseller 6 times now on Amazon.
That's amazing.
Feedback, you know, and the purpose was not to make money. The purpose was to reach how many people will pick it up, read it, and find it helpful and maybe pass it along so that everyone feels like they've got tools to help them, you know, get through their trauma.
Well, luckily, like those two things go hand in hand.
Right.
Like reach and sales. Right. No, yeah. I thought it was really wonderful. Tons of stuff highlighted. I really like how you weave your story in. And boy, do you have quite a story. Yeah. When did you start working on the book?
So when COVID hit, I remember I was actually, the inspiration came when I spent a month with my youngest daughter who was pregnant. And she was about to give birth. And so there was a lot of time just to kind of, I don't know, let things bubble to the surface as far as, you know, anything inspirational, because, you know, most of us were locked down anyway. And I was asked to get on my first podcast before I ever wrote the book about trauma, because a few people had heard about my story. And it was after that interview through the Ayurvedic community where I realized maybe I should just write a book. And so as I began to write the book, I realized I had some sort of block around writing, either writing or typing. So I actually spoke of the book and had it transcribed. And I still to this day, that's how my writing is, because I find it much easier to just speak it than to try to figure out, you know, how to type it and all of that.
I am the exact same way. I feel like there's some big nugget there.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is, but like for me, same thing. I will spend 10 minutes on one sentence. Is that how you are?
Yes.
And it's so annoying.
Yes.
But this is another thing that I've noticed though. And I wonder, you're speaking it, but the other thing though that I've noticed too is that I need to be speaking in front of an audience. Like when I just try to speak with myself, I've gotten a little bit better, but I do find that I also overanalyze more, not to the same severity as writing.
Right.
But I find that when it's like me just talking to my phone, that I will overthink things, et cetera. Whereas it's like, I need that crowd element. It's gotten easier for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know what the, do you remember that from childhood? Cause I can remember it from a very young age.
Yeah. But what's interesting is I used to be so like, I had such stage fright. You know, I was a really good singer. And the moment I had to get up at like and do a solo, like I was just way too nervous. So it actually surprises me that I feel way more comfortable to speak in front of a crowd or in front of people. But there was always this feeling as a child of needing to like do my absolute best in school and get the approval from the teachers. And it was probably because I wasn't getting the type of approval I needed at home, you know? But there's still inner child healing for me to do around the writing or typing. There's something going on there. And it's not high on my priority list since I can do it this way.
Yeah.
Of all the things. I'm
exactly.
Doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what it is for me. For me, the fear and the thoughts that I remember from as early as second or third grade was that I knew what I wanted to say, but I just couldn't figure out how to put it into writings on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
And so then so when I sit down to write, or if I'm going to write something, I get I get triggered, like I'll get physical anxiety in my body, and I will go into the experience with the expectation that this is going to be a challenge for me and that I'm going to have a hard time figuring out what I want to say and that I'm not going to get anything done. Thank God I've just decided to become a podcaster and not a writer. So
right? It works.
Okay. So I want to get into your story some.
Sure.
Yeah. You had quite a, like if somebody like wants to know what childhood trauma is, it's like your story.
And, you know, I tried to write it in a way that it wouldn't traumatize others. So I tried to keep it as high level as possible. There's a lot that didn't make it into the book. That's not necessary. Mm. But one of the things I'm actually grateful for about my whole experience thus far in life is that whether you come from a very good upbringing, or let's say you come from an incredibly hard upbringing with lots of trauma, lots of abuse, all the way down to like maybe you're a gang member or things like that, I feel like I can relate with everybody. Mm-hmm. And I really love that. That means I can step into any dynamic and feel okay and comfortable, you know? So in that way, I'm actually totally grateful for those experiences.
Yeah. And you don't have to like question, like some people are like, well, was my childhood traumatic? What's it? You're like, well, you don't have to worry about that stage.
No, I hear the opposite. People hear my story and then they feel like theirs doesn't, you know, measure up. And that's mm-hmm. why I referenced in the book that you should never compare your trauma, because what was traumatic for you is your trauma, that you cannot compare trauma at all. Some people will have trauma like I've had, and maybe they didn't feel traumatized
exactly
by it. That's wonderful. I happen to feel traumatized by it. That's my trauma.
There's so many varying factors into how it impacts someone that is like beyond the actual experience itself, but it's really not. And I just made a video about this, about how it's not about what happened. It's about what you came to believe about yourself and the world as a result of what happened.
Yes.
And so like for an adult child, our core issue is the faulty beliefs and fears that we've internalized as kids. And yeah. So being sexually abused versus somebody who's emotionally neglected, both of those experiences can result in the belief of I am unworthy of love, or, you know, I am inherently flawed. So, and especially as kids, like we're not able to make sense of things.
And that's usually what leads us into unhealthy relationships then as we get older. You know, that's all we're familiar with. So if you only know and are familiar with trauma or dysfunction, you're going to go right into it. And that's why I continually just keep reiterating the message that you need to work on yourself first. It doesn't mean you can't have a relationship, but make yourself the relationship. You know, marry yourself, date yourself, make sure that you are the priority, because otherwise you're just going to keep attracting the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I was just going to make a video about this later, but I feel like I was doing that,
yeah.
But I wasn't getting to the core issues.
Yeah.
Right. Like I was taking breaks from dating.
Right.
I was going to therapy. I was thinking of an analogy of it. It's like, you know, like I was like this glass bowl and I had these big rock lying at the bottom, which was like my childhood trauma mm-hmm. that was getting stirred up anytime I would get into a relationship. I wasn't unaware of the rocks. I knew about the rocks and I could describe to you what the rocks looked like from the exterior. I could describe to you the events and everything that occurred, but I couldn't tell you. I had no idea what was inside of the rocks.
Yeah.
Which was the unresolved trauma, that it was even trauma at all, the feelings that I had suppressed, and then those internalized beliefs. But I wasn't able to do that because I didn't have like the language or the information. And it wasn't until I read the adult child book, mm-hmm. I finally had the context to be able to like see things more clearly. What yeah. was your aha?
Wow. I don't know. I mean, the biggest aha for me as far as a shift of direction. I mean, I ran away from home when I was 15.
Yeah. Well, let's go to your childhood. So what's your earliest childhood memory?
Okay. My earliest childhood memory is actually an incredibly positive one. And so I'll honor my late grandmother with this one. I was 2 years old And she was holding my hand, taking me to a vending machine to get a Hershey bar because my brother had just been born. So I remember that vividly. You know, I remember her pushing the buttons. I remember watching the Hershey bar come down. I remember my excitement. Wow, I'm going to meet my brother. I remember looking up at her, holding her hand. So yeah, I can remember as far back as 2 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's your earliest, not so wonderful memory?
Probably around the same age. So both of my parents, you know, they were unwell, you know, meth addicts, also alcoholics. They were physically, mentally, emotionally, psychologically, and sexually abusive. Mm-hmm. So, I do have memories of, you know, different things happening, from both parents, 2 years old being the youngest. Mm. And this went on, you know, continuously. And by the time I was 15, I was a straight A student destined for medical school. But school wasn't teaching me anything about how to deal with what was going on at home. My teachers, a few of them, I think, suspected. And so they would create, you know, opportunities for me to stay after school. Like my music teachers always were asking me to learn how to play a new instrument, stay after school, grade papers, things like that.
Had you told anyone?
No. And I can't say that even at that point that I felt like I could.
I was going to say, if you felt like you had like something to tell.
Yeah, because there was such a facade. Like my mom would literally call it showtime. And showtime was, mm-hmm. okay, everybody put on your happy face. We're going out into public and everybody needs to believe that we are all happy and doing well. And this, you know, facade went on for a long time. So I almost felt like nobody would believe me if I said anything anyway, you know, and now, you know, here I are years later and I've got friends from elementary, junior high, high school who've read my book who were like, oh my God, I had no idea. Their parents even contacted me. We had no idea.
Wow.
You know?
I feel like people have this idea of what somebody who's on meth like looks like. I mean, would it?
Oh, no, it wasn't obvious. Yeah. Like most people think of a meth addict, they're all skinny, sucked up. And while both of my parents had gotten to that point at some point, it was not so incredibly obvious. You know, for a while, they were able to maintain their jobs. And still, you know, maintain their addiction. You know, they were functioning addicts to some level. There were times where it got really bad. We'd get evicted. All of our stuff would end up storage. They couldn't pay for the storage. We'd lose everything. I remember learning how to shoplift as a kid, you know, peanut butter and jelly, things like that. Because I have five siblings or have five.
Where are you?
I'm the eldest.
You're the oldest.
Yeah. Yeah. And there were periods where they'd get clean, but then they'd go back. So, you know.
And what about other family?
Well, my grandmother and grandfather knew. And I feel like they did the best that they could. Although I wish somebody would have just taken us out of the home. And even though like Child Protective Services had shown up quite a few times, we were never, or I was never put in a home, you know, a different home. So I don't know if back then it was one of those, it was embarrassing to talk about, you know, I feel like there was that going on in the generational line.
Oh yeah.
You know, stigma. But grandma was great in that she always, whenever we were at her house, she would, you know, take us to the land of fairy tales. And so that's where I feel like my storytelling capability and my love for being a grandmother now, has really blossomed is because of her. I feel like I got through my childhood because of the ability to
escape
and totally escape, mm-hmm. you know? So now when I'm with my grandchildren and I'm telling them stories or, you know, making them believe that the gnomes that are around me are alive and that they're doing things, like that's part of, you know, what she passed down to me, you know? Yeah.
So when you were homeless,
yeah.
At what age?
So at age 15, I dropped out of high school. And I hitchhiked from Northern California to Southern California. And that was a very...
And what was your plan? And was it to escape what was going on at home?
Yeah, the plan was to escape what was going on at home. I didn't totally have a plan. I mean, I was 15. All I knew was just go somewhere far, far away and figure it out when you get there.
And what about with your other siblings? I mean, did you not have a caretaker role with them?
Oh, I totally did.
You did.
I totally did. And it was the hardest. Like, I remember I was on the run for 18 months.
Wow.
Till I gave birth to my first daughter. And I remember I would wake up crying every morning, just missing them. Yeah.
Did you have any money when you left?
No, I had no money. I hitchhiked to Santa Barbara and I learned how to live homeless there. There was a homeless encampment. I met a lot of Vietnam vets, and it clearly was like divine intervention, because these people just knew something wasn't quite right, but there was a way that we were relating, and I felt like they knew I had PTSD. I had no idea what I had, you know? And so people were just looking out for me, and I knew I can't look homeless, and I can't get picked up by the police. So I've got to be really careful, you know? And so I figured out where were the free meals being served. I managed to get a tent.
Were you using drugs?
No.
Wow.
I learned how to live on the beach. I learned how to live now homelessness is so prevalent. And when I see people living like off in the bushes, I'm like, yeah, that's how you do it. Mm-hmm. You know? But that's also when I met my first husband, you know, and he was, now here's a good example of when you don't deal with your
stuff. Is that like a good, should I maybe go there to like look for a husband? Like, I think, is that like a good encampment? Is that like a good place? I haven't tried that, but I don't know if I'm willing to do.
But I basically, you know, the first man to tell me he loves me, of course, I have mommy daddy issues. So anybody, whether male or female, who tells me, I love you, I'm going to take care of you, guess what? 15-year-old girl is going to totally believe it, or at least this one did, you know? And so I did. And I ran right into the arms of the same thing I had just left, you know? Mm-hmm. And thinking, okay, well, if I love him enough, if I do what he wants, he's totally going to change, you know? And he was twice my age, you know? So it, you know, 15, 32. And I had not, my father had always provided. So it did not occur to me that there would be a man who did not provide.
Mm-hmm.
Even though there were drugs, that just didn't compute, you know? So, you know, when I went into labor with my first daughter, because I got pregnant, obviously, on the run. And
did you go to any doctor's visits at all?
I did. So back then there were no, we didn't have a problem with identity theft. So I was able to lie and say that my purse got stolen. I gave a fake age. So I think I would tell people I was 19 and that I was waiting for my Medi-Cal stickers. Back then, it was stickers that they gave you. And so basically, I got free medical care, free shelter, and women and infant children's program. And that was what I ate, was from those coupons. Just from giving that story.
Mm, wow. Yeah. Yeah. What year was this?
1994-95.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you probably like just made it.
I totally just made it. Yeah. And then I remember the house that we were in was in eviction. And
you and your husband? How did you get married? Or were you actually married?
We weren't even married yet. We got married after my first daughter was born. So I was 17. But I remember going into labor and thinking, I don't want my daughter to be in this situation. I've got to figure something out. And so I went into labor, and that was the first time I called my grandparents after 18 months. And so they drove. By then I was...
What was that call like?
You know, it was like a breath of fresh air. You know, of course, they were like crying, oh my God, where are you? Can we come get you?
I'm sure they were convinced and you were
having
dead.
Distractions and not having any support. And I'm like, I just need help, you know? Mm-hmm. And so by then I was in Palm Springs because I knew the police were looking for me. There was a missing children's report. And so when I would get suspicious, I would just move to the next next city.
And would he come with you?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. And so he was able to like do odd jobs and, you know, make some cash here or there. For the long time, I worked at a movie theater making $4.25 an hour. And that's kind of why it was a little scary, because you could trace me through my social security number. It was a valid job, you know, But so I went, I was in Palm Springs by the time I went into labor. And so then my grandparents came and they drove me and him through a sandstorm in the back of a truck to get me to the hospital in Riverside. Riverside's where I was born, and that's where my grandparents lived at the time. And I remember looking at my grandmother, and I was like, Grandma, I don't want to do this. And she goes, well, honey, I think it's a little late for that now. And I remember just being so frightened about this whole experience, you know? And yeah. And so my only option I thought was going to be to live with my grandparents, but they had already worked it out that I was going back home. So that freaked me out. So here I've got my daughter, I've got this man with me who's not a good
Prince
man.
Charming.
Right. And now I got to go home. And I'm like, this is like bringing two like hells together. I mean, I laugh about it now when I think about it, because it's so crazy.
Was he an addict?
Yeah, he was a meth addict. Mm-hmm. Right. So came back, and it took 6 months for me to, by the time my daughter Laurel was 1 month old, I remember, and this is how naive I was about even being a mother. You know, the old bike seats that sit in the back that have no support for a kid. Okay. Mm-hmm. All I knew was I need to get a job and I need to get out of here. So I bundle her up, got her all wrapped up. She's 1 month old. She's in this little car seat, and I'm riding my bicycle to the nearest grocery store to see if I can get a job. Mm-hmm. And so I've got her in my arms as I'm interviewing, filling out the application. The guy gives me a job immediately. And it took me 6 months of just working, saving money. And then I was able to get my first apartment, move out of the house.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was your experience back in the house then with like your daughter and your parents?
Well, there was this feeling of, I wonder if they're different. I wonder if they've changed. But I remember my grandparents drove us halfway, because I was in Southern California. My parents were in Northern. So we met halfway to basically, you know, shift us into a different car to go up north. And I remember thinking, I just would like my mom to give me a hug and tell me that she misses me. She didn't even look at me. She said, "Where's that baby?" And she picked up my daughter like she owned her. And I remember thinking, oh God, nothing's changed, you know? So that was why there was such an urgency. You know, most moms at least get 3 months off. I was like, no, I need to go back. I need to make money. I need to get out of here. And so that's what I did.
What was the guy working?
You know, he had good periods of time where he could stay clean. Well, I shouldn't say good periods of time. I'd say 3 to 6 months, which was good periods of time comparatively.
Yeah. I mean, anything was, right?
So, you know, and he'd work for, you know, different like moving companies and stuff like that. Mostly he would make cash under the table, you know, so there was a little bit of help sometimes. So I remember thinking, you know, once we got our first apartment, like, okay, this stability, you know, should be good. And
what are you, 17 years old?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And so I'm thinking, okay, so if we get married, then everything will be okay.
Mm-hmm. I've never have heard.
So that's what we did. You know, we got married and of course nothing changed. And then I had my second daughter. I got pregnant when I was 20. I had her right before I turned 21.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's like, talk about no childhood.
Oh, at all. Yeah. I mean, the best parts of my childhood are with my grandparents, where I really felt like a kid. Didn't have to do any chores, didn't have to take care of anybody, be responsible for anybody, you know, didn't have to manage, oh, is mom getting drunk? Do I need to go clean up her vomit? Like, what's going on with dad? Like, there was none of that. Yeah. So essentially I didn't get a childhood, and that's, you know, I'm in an interesting phase of life now where my inner child is getting to like finally go out and play.
And have fun. Yeah.
Really have fun, you know, and I'm really grateful for that, but it also brings up a lot of emotion because I'm like, wow, there's so many things I didn't get to experience. Yeah. So, and I was in that relationship from 15 to 25.
Wow. You know,
it took, God, it took forever. It seemed like to really, truly leave him, you know?
And what was the final straw?
So I came, I had worked my way up the corporate ladder for a company that sold Visa and MasterCard service.
What were you doing?
Basically learned how to do telemarketing. And then I worked myself up to VP of marketing just because I'm really good at sales. And so I remember coming home because
no no high school degree.
No, I did get my GED.
Okay. Yeah.
But no college education. So I remember coming home and I remember my eldest daughter showing very familiar signs of sexual abuse. And I realized, oh crap, this has totally repeated itself. This is like, of all the things, it didn't occur to me that that would happen. But I also still hadn't really dealt with my issues yet, right? Everything's just total survival for 25 years. Everything was just survival. So I immediately quit my job. Started collecting unemployment.
How old was she?
Seven. Yeah, she was seven because we were eight when we left. So I quit my job and then I started trying to create a plan, you know, and I would slowly move out things to my grandparents' house. I knew I could only leave with what I could put in the car. It had to be a situation where obviously he, you know, didn't know when it was going to happen. And I had made a few attempts and was not successful. So it got to the point where, you know, he was, there was no
like situation. He caught you or what happened?
Yeah. Like he would catch me and then I, you know, would try to lie about it or something. Cause there was a lot of physical abuse going on too. Like my daughter saw me, you know, being physically abused. And so I remember thinking, I'm going to have to get really strategic here. And that's probably about the time I picked up Stephen Covey's book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And that book completely changed my life because it started talking about self-mastery. And that's when I realized I got to start mastering myself and I got to get us the hell out of here. And then I got to figure out how does this not repeat itself again? You know, because I left thinking I want a different life. And now here I am, another generation has been born and it has happened.
And so you were able to see that?
I could see it. I just didn't know how do I get to the other side of that. All I could think of was just get help, get therapy, get something, you know? And so it took about a year of planning and, you know, and multiple attempts. And finally, you know, I would role play with my daughters every possible escape route. The youngest, she was too young to know what we were doing. And I couldn't tell her. She would obviously say something. But the eldest knew, and so she could keep a secret.
So what would you say to her?
Well, she was the one. She was like, Mommy,
we got to get out of here.
And we got to go. And so we would role play all the different scenarios, all the way down to like the most severe, which would be throw a mattress out of the second story window, jump out of the window, land on the mattress, get in the car and go. Like I had to think of every possible thing because of how he was. And now luckily that's not how it had to play out. I remember I had figured out the day that we were going to go and I was waiting for my unemployment check. Unemployment check came at the same time every single week, not this week. And I needed that for gas. So the check doesn't come. And I'm thinking to myself, what the hell? There's enough, you know, out of the girl's room that if he goes in there, he's going to notice things, enough things are missing. And so I thought, well, we're just going to have to, you know, do the best that we can. So he got high that night, like he did most nights. And I decided to get high with him to keep him busy. So he was on meth. I was on meth. And because he had been putting it in my drinks for so long, like against my will, like I never wanted to be high. I had actually learned, and this is what I realized, I was learning bits of meditation through this whole process. And it's only because I'm a meditator now that I recognize it, because I didn't want to experience being high. So I would focus on how do I lower my heart rate? How do I get myself to fall asleep? How do I not like be fidgety and agitated? All of the things that I'm high on meth. And that's what I worked on for the longest time. So when it came time where I chose to join him for the sake of—
Did he think that that was weird?
I don't know. I don't know. If anything, I think he was more excited, like finally it worked. And so I did, but I actually didn't get high. I did not feel high at all, but he thought I was. So basically, you know, here he was high. I kept him distracted all night. And then through the next morning, he got really paranoid. We were 2 months late on our car payment. And he said, I think I hear a tow truck coming. I think you need to go move the van and go park it in the parking garage so that it doesn't get, you know,
repoed.
So my daughters are asleep on the couch. I had put them to sleep with their shoes on because I knew we're going to go. I just don't know how it's going to happen. And he kept taking their shoes off. So I thought we're leaving without shoes. I had two backpacks next to the door that had everything we needed, the extra van key so that he didn't have access and all of our documentation.
How did you feel?
Oh my God. It was like, it was like a panic and yet a calm, like have to stay calm because I knew enough that if I was in panic mode, I could only see like this and I needed to see bigger. So I go and I move the van. My daughters are asleep when I leave the apartment. So that means there's only a few minutes have gone by. I pull the van up and both of my daughters are now awake downstairs with no shoes on, crying. I mean, Laurel had said that, that basically the dad had woken them up yelling at them. And so now they're here they are. And I was like, wait, they're both here. This is it. This is the opportunity. And I could, I heard the voice, you know, really loudly say, now you have to go now. And so I yelled out the code word, which was blueberries. Both girls got in the van.
Did that mean just run to the car?
Blueberries meant you get in the car. It's happening now. Everything we've been training for, this is what's happening. And I remember my youngest, she was just excited because all she knew was that that meant that we were going on an adventure, right? So here she is, she's excited. The eldest is kind of like in panic mode. I looked at her and I said, no matter what, no matter what you see, no matter what you hear, you are not to unlock this car door unless it's me or the police. And she said, okay, Mom. So I locked her in, car was running. I locked her in and I ran upstairs so that I could get the two backpacks because we needed it. And as I'm approaching the door, he's standing right there. And I'm thinking to myself, no effing way. It is not, he's not going to stop me this time. And so whatever came over me, I swear it must've been my higher power because I just turned on the charm. Oh no, I'm going to go get a babysitter. We're going to party all day. Like he's like, and I could see that he was suspicious. And so he's like, okay, well, I'll go with you. And I noticed that he didn't have shoes on. I was like, okay, well, go, you know, go get your shoes. And I knew they were in the back part of the apartment. So as he's running to the bedroom to get his shoes, I grab the two backpacks.
Book it.
I grab the girl's shoes and I run down the stairs. My feet come out from underneath me. And so all my daughter sees is me flying down the stairs. And I look at her and I'm giving her the this, you know, the sign to unlock the door. So she unlocks the door. I throw the backpacks in, put it in reverse. And then I call grandma and grandpa because I've got 7 minutes to drive there, whatever's in the garage, help them, have them put it in the van and leave because my husband at the time, he could run super fast. And I knew we only lived a mile away. So I was like, he could probably run a 7 minute mile. So that's what I was guesstimating was the time frame I had.
What had you told your grandparents?
They knew I was trying to leave. They knew that there was abuse happening, all of it. And so then I told grandpa, I said, I have no money. My check didn't come. He's like, I got you. So I back up into their driveway. They've got the garage door open. They're both helping load up the van. Grandpa puts a wad of cash. He said, just go. We'll take care of everything else. And off we went.
Where were you headed?
Back home. Back home to my parents' house. So it was the decision of, you know, the lesser of two evils, you know, and at the time they were in a clean phase. So I felt like, okay, if they're in a clean phase, at least I could get myself restarted somewhere. And they did, they were clean for quite some time, which was really nice. You know, we did have really good moments, but unfortunately the habit, you know, it continued. And so at some point I decided I'm not going to keep doing this cycle with them. But I, you know, I basically started over.
Were you not afraid that he was going to come up there? Or
all right, shit show ladies, have you ever had those days where everything just feels so much damn harder than normal and you can't figure out why? I already know the answer to that question is yes. And boy, have I definitely had more than my fair share of those days and totally get just how frustrating this can be. But recently, I've learned that sometimes it's not just stress, lack of sleep, a dysregulated nervous system. It could also be my hormones at play. And that is where Happy Mammoth comes in. They offer a free 2-minute quiz that can help you uncover the root cause of your hormonal symptoms. It's super easy. Any shit show can do it. Just answer a few questions about what you've been going through and where you're at in life. After taking this quiz, you'll get personalized recommendations to help balance your hormones and start feeling better. So I took this hormone quiz myself. The quiz suggested that my body may be overloaded with estrogen, which is affecting me in all kinds of ways. And one of the recommendations that I got was to start taking Hormone Harmony, which helps with bloating, chronic fatigue, weight gain, mood swings, and more. And after adding it to my routine, I've definitely noticed a difference. Now, taking care of your hormones isn't just about feeling good right now. It's also about investing in our healing journey. And so by taking this quiz, you'll learn more about your hormone balance, which will allow you to start making small, intentional changes to support you on this healing journey. Whether it's the Hormone Harmony or another Happy Mammoth product, the quiz helps guide you towards solutions that work specifically for you. So if you're ready to start feeling like yourself again, head over to happymammoth.com and take their free 2-minute hormone quiz today to find out the ultimate answer to your stubborn hormonal issues. And for a limited time, you can also get 15% off your entire first order with my code ADULTCHILD at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ADULTCHILD for 15% off today.
I was totally afraid. The moment I got there, I called the Mountain View Police Department and I said, I need to file a restraining order. I need help. I know he's coming. Like, you know, so they did, they got me an emergency restraining order. And he did actually show up for the restraining order hearing, which shocked me. And I remember sitting in the courtroom and he showed up and, or no, I was sitting waiting to go into the courtroom and I saw him come through the front door and I panicked. I thought I was going to come out of my chest. And a woman who was a domestic violence advocate, she saw my reaction.
And she knew.
She must have known because she watched me come into the courtroom and then he tried to approach me and I was frozen. I was shaking. And so she's behind me and she reaches forward. She said, will you please step outside with me? I'm a domestic violence advocate. My name is Jillian, and that's the name of my second daughter. So I felt relieved, like, okay, I know that, you know. So I go outside and she said, look, you are, the way he is with you right now, it's very inappropriate. He's not even supposed to be talking with you. She's like, so I'm going to, you know, basically represent you. I'm going to go talk to the bailiff to make sure that the bailiff keeps an eye on him. While we get through this proceeding, and then I'd like to be there to support you. And I was like, yeah, wow. I'll take any help I can get. And so we went through that hearing, you know, and I got the restraining order and full custody of the kids and all of that. And then immediately we got into therapy.
Wow. What happened to him?
Basically just that the restraining order had been filed, so he just couldn't be near us, but there was no proof yet of anything. I mean, just enough to get a restraining order, right? But because he had always worked odd jobs, never worked under his social, because he had other children and other marriages, he had child support. So he couldn't keep a job without his wages being attached, you know, plus he had his addiction. So even though reports were filed from the therapists to Child Protective Services because of things that came out in therapy, things that I had reported as well, they were always trying to find him to, you know, bring something to court, but it was never successful. He was really good at moving, you know, and then at some point, you know, the girls became adults and it was like, well, is it necessary anymore? You know, at some point, do you really want to go through all that again? And you don't. Right. And last we had heard, at that point was that he was, you know, in Florida somewhere and, at that time, and, you know, same thing, you know, couldn't pay his $100 rent out of a trailer park, was with some underage girl. So I was like, nothing's changed, you know?
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow. So, so now you got to heal yourself, but then you also have these two little ones.
Right. And it's so challenging because I was so triggered as a mom. The ages that, whatever age they were at, it reminded me of when I was that age. So it was really hard. You know, when your own children trigger you, like, it's really hard to be a parent. There's really no time for me to deal with my own stuff. All I can do is, how do I survive through this and try to be the best parent that I possibly can be? And then try to get help whenever I can. Oh, and be the main provider, the only provider, because it wasn't like I was getting child support or anything. But it has all worked out. You know, we started our life over. I got into the same, you know, sales just to make ends meet. And then I went into a trade, and that's how now I have my own practice. And interestingly enough, tomorrow will be the 19th year anniversary, which is also my mother's birthday, of when we left and started. So,
wow.
Yeah.
It's like you're very divinely inspired, you know, like you can just tell that your higher power was with you through that experience and getting you out, and God. and also too, I just feel, I don't know. It just seems like you had this kind of like this knowing, kind of like this inner knowing of certain things that is interesting to me.
You know,
like I'm wondering if there's like some past life stuff.
There must be, because it's still like that for me. Like, no matter how bad something gets, I just feel like, nope, it's all going to work out. It's all going to be okay. Yeah.
So talk about, you know, what were kind of the key moments of your healing journey, modalities, you know, like talk about that for you.
So the trade that I first got into was, I went to massage school. Mm-hmm. Now, I had never had a massage. It was a logical, right? It was a logical decision. I was like, well, I know how to sell. I know how to market. So that means I could create my own business.
Why did you decide to, so random?
It is so random, but like, I actually didn't know how to explore what field to go into. An advertisement came on the TV, and the two options that piqued my interest, believe it or not, were mechanic and massage therapy, because I was
a
like,
mechanic.
Oh, I know, right? And I actually really like the whole idea of putting things together, taking them apart. But then when I thought about what my hands would look like, I was like, but I like the idea of helping people. So that's what I did. And it was when I got into school and I started receiving massages that I realized my body's holding on to a whole lot of stuff.
Had you been in therapy at this point? Like, what sort of like therapy?
I had gone
casual.
It was regular therapy. Like, I would speak and they would tell me back what I said. It was, I can't remember what that's called. And then I would set goals, you know, of things I wanted to change in my life. And so I went through massage school realizing, okay, when somebody touches me, I'm remembering this. Or I'm finally in such a deep state, but now I can't quite wake up. Different things were coming up.
Were you aware of like that trauma was stored in the body? Like, did you have that knowledge?
No idea of that concept at all. And then when I would give a massage, it was so like second nature. I just knew, oh, this person needs this here. No. And even my teacher, she said, I'd like you to give me a massage this time. And so I gave her a massage and she's like, you are going to take this somewhere. It's going to go beyond this.
Wow.
And so before I ever graduated, I actually started my practice. And the first thing I realized was, massage is great, don't get me wrong, but when people have core problems, and this is not even the mental emotional piece, this is the physical piece, it's not getting to the core problem. So then I felt like, well, that means I'm destined to make money off of people who will never get better for the rest of my life. And that didn't feel good to me.
Mm.
So I sought out different modalities that were more conscious. How do I treat a body, get them out of pain, but teach people how to self-treat, maybe retrain their habits, things like that. And so I found a modality called push therapy, which is similar to Rolfing, which also taught self-treatment.
Can you explain what that is?
So it's basically a different way of working the tissue, where you are going across the grain of the muscle. The client never has to disrobe. You don't have to use any oils or creams. So it's very easy to come in, get an appointment, go back to work.
Kind of like Thai massage?
Not like Thai, but yeah, no, it's not like Thai.
Okay.
Yeah. It
That's
can
the
be.
only like clothes-on massage I've ever had, so
Yeah.
I just went with it.
It almost has more of a physical therapy feel to it.
Okay.
But what I liked was teaching people how to treat themselves. And that's when I realized I really liked this idea of people feeling empowered to do something about their own pain. So it was just starting on the physical level, though. But as I was working with people, people were naturally talking about all of their problems, all of their trauma. And I'm thinking to myself, I got my own issues. There's no way I can help these people. But people were just continually talking to me. And I thought, well, okay. So I then, found other modalities like process acupressure that would allow you to at least support somebody on the table as they were emotionally processing different acupressure points, to help like calm them. And that's when I really started getting more passionate about the trauma aspect because people were bringing their trauma. I was healing my trauma. It was just like, it was a trauma overload. Everything was saying, look at the trauma. And so I just kept continuing. Anytime I found a modality that worked for me, I wanted to get certified or at least learn how to do it. And then at some point, I brought the Ayurvedic medicine into it, which is where my degree is now.
How did you get exposed to that?
So in
And also explain what that, because there's probably people who aren't familiar with the term.
Ayurveda means the science of life. It's the medicine that comes from India over 5,000 years ago, where food is medicine, we're aligned with nature, we have all of the elements within us, and all elements are around us. We are affected by everything externally and internally. So once we understand that and we know what's out of balance, what our basic nature is, then we can try to come back into balance with different spices, herbs. There are different, herbs that we can use to help bring somebody back into balance. But the reality is it's mainly diet and lifestyle. If you can get your diet, lifestyle, and routine in order, the rest is easy. It's not about throwing herbs at it. That's to help support once the diet, lifestyle, and routine are intact. So I had first heard about Ayurveda in massage school. And my massage teacher, she said, oh, you're a pitta kapha. And I thought, what a silly word. I don't know what this is. But basically, she said, well, see how you're thicker. And she said, okay, that's more the kapha energy, but see how you always turn red, and things like that. She said, well, that's more the pitta energy. So that was the only time I had heard it. And then my now ex-husband,
You're like, thanks. I'm thick and I get red. Thanks, lady.
Right. Well, I didn't know what to do with that, but she was learning, so she was excited. And so then my now ex-husband, he had given me a book called Yoga and Ayurveda by Dr. David Frawley, and that's where I got to really find out, okay, what is this Ayurveda? And I was fascinated by it. And then I had a medical issue that came up that Western medicine couldn't figure out, what was going on. And through some divine messaging and divine intervention, I was led to actually seek out an Ayurvedic doctor. And so when I went to see him, he spent 90 minutes with me, asked me so many questions that nobody had ever asked. And he said, yeah, I know exactly what's going on. I've got a plan. And he put together a plan, and I was amazed, and I totally trusted him. And that's actually Dr. Jayaraj Ankudikanath, who wrote the foreword of my book. And so I left his office that day, and it was also an academy. And I signed up immediately for classes, just wanting to learn about myself.
Is he local? He's in the Bay Area.
Yeah, so the academy is in Milpitas. So I basically brought all of that information back into my practice because anything I learn that I'm excited about, I share. And I didn't realize it would take me this far to being a doctor of Ayurveda, but that's where it led. And in the meantime, I've still got my practice where I'm helping people with their trauma, and I'm developing a work that doesn't have a name at that point. All I know is that here are the things I'm doing, and I actually had to really think about it. What am I doing during these sessions? Because things come out and happen. So as I would document more, that's when I realized, okay, there's an actual process here. Now I need to give that process a name. And That was interesting too, because I kept thinking the right name will come at the right time. And I woke up at 3 a.m. and that's when I had it. And it was an acronym. I kept hearing adhere, but not as you spell it, A-D-H-E-R-E, but as it's pronounced, which is E-D-H-I-R. And that's what the acronym is for, which is explore, discover, heal, integrate, and relate. Those were the five steps. And so I immediately wrote that down. I looked up, okay, does somebody have this name? And then I got it registered trademarked immediately because I was like, nope, this is exactly the work that's going to come out. I just need to make sure I've got it. And that was happening while I was writing my book at the same time. And now, you know, here we are today.
I mean, so a lot of it, there's three different types. Like when it comes, I read a book, somewhat of a book.
Oh, on Ayurveda. Ayurveda, okay. Yeah. So, the three universal energies are Vata, Pitta, and Kapha. Uh-huh. So Vata is air and space. Pitta is water and fire. Mm-hmm. And Kapha is earth and water. So these are essentially all of the elements. We just call them a little bit differently than, let's say, Chinese medicine. Mm-hmm. So when these three elements are balanced within your system, you are completely balanced. Now, I have yet to meet somebody who's completely balanced, because we live in a world and in a nature that is out of balance. So it's about noticing when you go too far out of balance, and how do you bring it back into balance by understanding your own nature, understanding the seasons, understanding how those seasons affect you. And it affects each person differently. So what I absolutely love about Ayurveda is it really focuses on the uniqueness of each individual. Mm. I might be a Pitta Kapha constitution. You might happen to be the same, but we will experience it very differently. So whatever the protocol is for me, it's going to be different for you. And whatever's out of balance for you is going to show up differently than it is for me. So it's all very unique. And it's, you know, we look at you physically, mentally, emotionally, psychologically, and digestively. So all of those things need to be in balance. If your mind is out of balance, guess what? Your gut will be at some point too, or vice versa. So my specialty is in the mind for Ayurveda. It's called Sattva Vijaya Chikitsa, which is a long Sanskrit name. It's essentially Ayurvedic psychology or Ayurvedic psychiatry. And that's really where my passion is to support people mentally and emotionally, bridging that gap between that heart and mind disconnect that happens because of trauma. So I don't necessarily push or promote a specific modality, although I'm very proud to, you know, have my Ayurvedic degree. I try to speak a language that is comfortable and easy for everyone. So somebody might come in, and let's say they've come in for specialized body work, and maybe I notice, maybe I approach them from behind and they flinch. Something as simple as that is a cue that tells me there's something there. This person has had an experience, you know, or sometimes it's intuitive. Sometimes I'll just sense, wow, there's a lot going on. And it could be people come that way, and then they finally find out about the Ayurvedic piece. They find out the trauma specialty, or people have heard through either reading my book. They're like, hey, I'd like to work with you. I've got this, that, and the other. And now, you know, because of COVID, it opened everything up online. So I was able to, you know, see people online because of that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I love what you're doing. I think it's so cool and so needed. I mean, where do you feel like, where we're going wrong as far as treating trauma?
Well, that's a good question, because there's a lot out there on treating trauma. And I don't want to say we're doing anything wrong, because yep. I think if people are trying to get better and heal, that's doing right, if we want to label right and wrong. I think that there are many different options, and whatever option works best for you, that's the option you should go with. And if whatever you're doing is not working, you should keep seeking the method that may work. A lot of people who end up in front of me have gone through the traditional Western psychological approach and are so turned off by it, mainly because they don't want to sit there and start from the beginning and talk about the mm-hmm. whole thing. And I don't feel that's necessary. So far, I haven't felt that that is necessary. When somebody comes in, it's about just being present with what is. So really like finding out, well, what's happening in this moment? What are you feeling in this moment? What's happening in your life? And let's start there. And usually it's through that doorway that we will get to whatever that other issue is. That's usually some sort of wounded inner child.
I feel like that's how my therapist was when I started working with her. Cause that's like, that's one thing that makes, I think, people feel ambivalent, or that's what I was dreading. Like, I knew that it wasn't working with my therapist, but I also didn't want to have to start over with somebody from brand new. And that was exactly what my therapist, Mary, did. Was like, and it's still to that day, it's like, what's present for you right now?
Right.
And then it's like, we're able to go backwards, you know?
And I work with a psychodynamic coach who specializes in depth psychology. So, you know, Jungian psychology. Mm-hmm. And he works with me the same way. It's like, well, what's coming up now? You know, and I love it, you know, and we always get to something, always.
Do you have like an interesting, like, patient, like, client story that you would want to share or you think would be beneficial for people to hear?
Well, there are quite a few. I've had cases where people have come in with physical pain. And we've tried the whole, you know, doing all the physical stuff that I know, even looking at diet and lifestyle, and still that pain doesn't go away. And it wasn't until we started doing more of the inner child, the adhere process, that the pain finally went away. So I feel it's important for people to understand, if you have some sort of pain, it may actually be more on the somatic level.
Mm-hmm.
We need to look at it from a completely different angle. One woman, she was holding on to her shoulder, her right shoulder was incredible pain. And through the sessions that we had, she was holding on to the disappointment that she had with, she felt she disappointed her father, and her father had passed. So she didn't feel like there was closure.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to go through that. We had to go all the way through her as a little kid, feeling like she could never live up to his expectations. And through that session, actually, the response she got, and again, this is all through her own psyche. So there's no way to say that this actually happened or it didn't happen. It's happening because the psyche, it's already being generated in the mind. So the moment your mind believes something, it's happened. So through that session, you could see that her father actually felt like he was a failure as a father.
Mm.
So they had this beautiful moment together. And even though he had already passed, and as she came out of that and, like, you know, they had this beautiful moment, she came out of the session, her shoulder pain never came back, you know? And I have another very interesting case where this woman, she couldn't live on her own. She was living in an abusive, psychologically abusive home with her mother. Her father had passed, whom she was really close to. Everything completely overwhelmed her. Couldn't go to the grocery store, had a hard time taking care of herself. Bathing was an issue. And we worked together for 7 months. And in the seventh month, she said, I've looked for an apartment. And I was like, oh my God, I am so excited. So now here we are. I think we've been working together for maybe 15 months. And this is a really extreme case. I don't expect that I will work with people for an incredibly long period of time, although it can totally happen. But in this case, because of where she was and where she'd like to be, there are some steps needed to get there. She's now living on her own. We're finally starting to have conversations about what does it look like if you provide for yourself, because mom's still providing. We haven't made it to the grocery store yet, but we're online shopping. You know, wow. Bathing is regular. She's actually doing her own work. So, like, she'll take... she has, you know, the workbook. And so she will carry this thing around with her, and she'll go through the I'm triggered worksheet. And she's like, okay, so this week I took this with me. I wrote down, you know, all the things that triggered me, and she's able to work the steps. So now when she gets online, because she lives on another part of the United States, she tells me, hey, this is what's coming up for me. Whereas before, she was not that articulate. I was the one explaining to her, here's what's happening. Now she's telling me, here's what I'm noticing.
Yeah, she has the language now.
Exactly what I want to hear, you know? And what's fascinating is that she'll be really hard on herself. I'm like, let's go back. Let me tell you about who I met way back.
Yeah, then. Exactly.
Remind her where she was at. And I think that's super important. Remind people where they were, because sometimes we forget. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually guilty of doing the same things. My friends and my social support group all the time are reminding me, especially when I get hard on myself. They're like, Janine, no, come here, you know? And we need that. We need that support.
Wow.
You know? And I truly believe if you have an intention to heal, you will heal. We cannot put a timeline on it, but it can happen. And I've seen it happen. I've lived it. I've got clients, you know, who have had great success. And I really feel like if we can all just support each other in whatever it is that's working for you, great. It doesn't have to be my way. If it's somebody else's, whatever, do it. Just do it. Be like courageous enough to turn around, look at your stuff, because at the end of the day, you have to live with yourself, right? And wouldn't you want to have the most amazing relationship with yourself if you're going to spend the rest of your life with yourself? That's what we need.
Ba-bam.
Yeah.
I'm curious about how your daughters are doing and what like their journeys looked like.
Well, they're both married now. They both have two kids of their own. You know, they both have their careers. I don't want to like expose too much, you know. Yeah. But definitely they are, I would say they are much better parents than I could possibly be. And I love seeing that. I love being a grandma. In fact, I feel like I'm getting a second opportunity because I did not enjoy those years, with my own children. Mm-hmm. So now I'm able to like, be with my grandkids and really like be a kid with them, you know, and my daughters will tease me. They're like, man, when we were growing up, mom served food and said, this is what you're getting. This is what you're going to eat. But with the grandkids, she's like, okay, would you like your sandwich cut into stars or hearts? You know, just, it's a very different thing. And I totally appreciate that, you know, but there's a lot of great communication. We have a great relationship. I'm willing to talk to them about anything. So if there's a memory that comes up, you know, from childhood, totally willing to talk about that. When they have struggles with their own parenting or life, we talk about it, you know. And I see it as we've been growing together this whole time. I mean, I was a kid when I had them.
Yes,
right?
You were.
So, and now here I am, a very young grandma. Now I'm a very young single grandma. So now I'm getting the whole like, you know, dating experience.
A young single grandma. Yeah, I mean, you look like you should maybe have a two-year-old. Man, is that your dating profile headline, young single grandma?
No, but it should be.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a huge market out there for that.
But, you know, it's fun because my inner child is getting an experience, or I should say my inner young adult, you know, like I'm essentially a woman in my 40s having the 20s experience. And it's such an important.
Oh, you.
I've been in a long-term relationships or marriages since I was 15 years old. Mm-hmm. I'm 44. Mm-hmm. There's a lot I missed out on, mm-hmm. you know? And so in some ways there's a naiveness that needs mm-hmm. to have maturity. Mm-hmm. You know? So I'm working with my psychodynamic coach through it. I'm like journaling after every experience, you know, like, okay, red flag about this. And what was the red flag about me and my behavior, you know? And I'm loving it. I'm just totally loving it. So I'm giving myself basically a minimum of 1 year to date, not get into anything serious, to really figure out what is it that I like, what don't I like, because I've learned how to conform and form myself for whatever partner I had. And I don't recommend that, but that's what we do. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I don't know if there's another long-term relationship in my future, and that's okay.
TBD.
I'm having an incredible time just with myself. So that's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, like I've done the marriage thing. I've done the long-term relationship thing. I've done the motherhood thing. And now I'm doing the grandmother thing.
The single grandma thing.
Right. So we'll see. I don't know.
The young single grandma thing.
Right.
We need a t-shirt for that.
We do need a t-shirt.
You're amazing.
Thank you.
I could talk to you for forever. Where should people find you?
You can go to goodbyetension.com. You can also find my book, Abundance Beyond Trauma, there. I do see people online all over the world. So
do you prefer people to buy the book through your website or on Amazon, or does it matter?
It doesn't matter, because on my website, it takes
it goes. Out. Okay. Just yeah. Watching.
Yeah. And if you've ordered the book or have a copy of the book and you haven't gotten the free downloadable workbook, make sure that you go to my website onto the contact form so that I can send that to you.
I need it. I didn't get it.
If
so it's a it's not okay, because I was going to go and buy the workbook. The
workbook here that's in paperback, but you get a free downloadable version when you purchase the book.
Okay, cool. Groovy. Well, you're awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.